This talk was recorded at Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society in Los Angeles and is freely offered for your enjoyment. For more information, please visit againstthestream.org.
So, what I want to talk to you about tonight is hopefully and probably many of the things that you experienced in that meditation. And they're called the five hindrances. The five hindrances that block our clarity, that block our ability to actually concentrate, that block our ability to concentrate, that block our ability to actually get free and liberated in this practice. And the hindrances are really mental factors. Sort of things that our mind does, which we're kind of born with. They're not our fault. It's just what we do. And we most recognize them and see them when we're still and when we're practicing.
When we're something.
When we're still.
Still.
Right? Typically, we're moving really fast in life. And we're doing what we do, and we habituate, and we do life the only way that we know how, right? Sometimes I think it would be such a trip to have somebody else's mind for a day. You know, like if we really just like plonked somebody else's mind into our heads, it would really be bizarre. I mean, we're all so the same in certain ways, but we don't have each other's habits. We don't have each other's families or, you know, ethnic origins, or all the ways that we were raised, and all of these things. I think it would just be such a strange thing to suddenly have somebody else's brain in our heads. And the hindrances would look a little different, but they would still all be there. Right? And so much of what we come to this practice for, and if I asked for a raise of hands, I'm pretty sure I would see most of you raise them to, you came to be happier, to suffer less, to find freedom, to live in a way. I mean, imagine living in a way that we weren't constantly controlled by and run by these incessant thoughts that really don't allow us to just live a happy life. They don't allow us to just love people. We have fears and blocks around loving. They don't allow us to just enjoy the little things in life, the small things in life, because we live in such a fast-paced society now that our expectations are really high. We need to be entertained, and it needs to happen fast. You know, if you watch commercials these days, or if you watch an interview of somebody, it's like, they go from a shot to their face, to their hands, to their feet, to their clothes, to their face, to the, you know, it's like everything is constantly jumping around. So we have very little time to just be still, to just settle, and then to really see what's happening, to really see what's beneath the surface, to really see what's brewing. So oftentimes we're just held by these hindered minds. And what it blocks us from is the actual ability to touch life. Because oftentimes when we get struck by a fear, or we get struck by a desire, or we get struck by sleepiness or restlessness or doubt, which I just named the hindrances. When we get struck by those, we tend to habitually not want to experience them. When those arise, it means there's something wrong. It means I'm doing something wrong, right? I'm in a lot of pain right now. There's something wrong. I'm really hating my life right now. There's something wrong. My job isn't working out. There's something wrong. I don't want to be here right now. There's something wrong. So we get in this way of when these hindrances are up, we think that we need to do something to make them go away. And so that's what I want to talk about a little bit tonight. And typically this talk is given on retreats, because after we've sat a few days on retreat, did anybody go on the Joshua Tree retreat that just happened? You did, Matthew?
In the fall?
Huh?
In the fall?
Oh, just now. Anyway, when we sit long retreats, or by the time, you know, the first couple days, it's just a lot of minutia. We get there and we're settling, and our minds are busy just with our typical lives. And then after a few days, when that's kind of settled, real life starts to, the real us, we start to meet the real us, right? The real us that chances are, with the rapidity of our lives and how busy we've been keeping ourselves, we've been trying to kind of hide from. We don't really actually want to see. So a lot of people keep themselves busy so they don't have to. We keep a lot of people around us, a lot of friends, a lot of activities, so that we don't actually have to settle into looking at. And so one of the things that this practice offers, and it can be a scary, it can feel like a really daunting and intimidating idea, but what it's asking for us to do is actually really to really do look, to stop running, to stop needing to get away. And until we can actually meet our suffering, which the Buddha talks about as the first noble truth, knowing our suffering, until we can actually know it and understand it, can we be free of it? So oftentimes this practice looks like bad news, you know? It looks like, what do you mean I have to know and understand my suffering? And what that comment means, and what the Buddha is pointing to, is until we actually do, we spend all of our time trying to make it go away. We spend all of our time in a state of what's called clinging or craving. We want to either be happy all the time, right? So we're clinging to states of joy and happiness, and we're going to do anything that it takes to hold on to that. We're going to actually manipulate our whole life so we can string together moment to moment to moment of happiness and hope that we can maintain that. And in actuality, I think that that causes a lot of addiction, right? Stringing happiness after happiness after happiness together creates compulsions, creates addictions, and we actually burn out on it. It's impossible to do. And then the other thing that we do is we are constantly pushing away the things that we don't like. The people we don't like, if only that person didn't exist, my life would be fine. If only I didn't have this job. If only I didn't live in this city. And sometimes that's true. I'm not saying that we have to, and I'll talk about that a little bit. I'm not saying that we need to stick around for abuse, or that we need to stick around when our wisdom is telling us something different. But what this practice is offering is for us to find a freedom from the stranglehold that our mind has on us, thinking that things need to be different than they actually are. And so with these hindrances, the Buddha is saying sort of two things. He's saying to get to a place of clarity in our meditation practice, to get to a place where we have these moments. Do you guys ever have these moments in your practice where you actually feel free? Like, it can last for a half a breath sometimes. But when you're not thinking about something, when you're not in some kind of pain, when you're just like, you have these moments when nothing is happening. And typically, we don't actually like that in life, right? When nothing is happening, it can oftentimes feel boring. And that is often said in an immature practice, when nothing is happening, it feels boring. It means we're not doing the work right or something. But in a mature practice, it's actually what we're looking for. It's actually that peaceful little nugget. And like I said, sometimes it only lasts for a breath. But an important thing to do is really pay attention to when that's happening. And I want to balance this out with not only talking about our seated practice, but our lives as well. So when you're having the kind of day that you think feels really, really shitty, chances are you're not allowing yourself to notice the little pieces that actually aren't, right? Because we get so tight and we get so hooked on the shitty. You know, you guys have probably heard that we have our mind is like Velcro for the bad stuff and like Teflon for the good stuff. You know, it's like we hold on to that so tightly, we get so constricted around that we tend to miss those really actually sweet, sweet moments when nothing great's happening and nothing horrible's happening. It's just really, to me, that's equanimity. To me, that is what makes me keep coming back. I used to be really into drama, right? I used to need heightened experiences all the time. But then I found this. It's like, oh, I like this. This is good. This works for me. So I want to talk about each of the hindrances one by one. I want to basically normalize things that might be coming up and showing up in your practice. So the first one is sensual desire, right? So how many of you on the cushion tonight? So sensual desire really lies in, if only I could have, you know, if I had ... my life would be perfect. If even on this cushion, right? So maybe for you, it was like, oh, I wish I had sat in a chair. If I had sat in a chair, this would have been a really good meditation. I don't know that that's what was happening.
Or maybe a wish that I had a better back.
Right, or a wish that you had a better back. Okay, perfect. Right, perfect. You know, so this desire piece is us being in a place. It's sort of like if anything comes between us and that thing we want, if anything or anybody comes between it, they're in trouble, right? We're on a mission. We want this thing, and we know it's the answer. And we crave it. He's smiling. It's, you know, it's like I like to look at the faces going, who relates to this? And, you know, I mean, ultimately, we just have a serious case of the want. I want the right partner. I want the right job. I want the right house. I want the right city. You know, and we live in this thing thinking that, deluded in the fact that if we had these things, everything would be okay, that there would be no problems. And what that does is it just makes us lose sight of reality, right? Suddenly we're gone. Suddenly we're on this treadmill trying to get these things. And, you know, that's where a lot of the power system comes from in our country. That's where a lot of the imbalance of power, the imbalance of money comes from, are these really greedy people who will do anything. They will step over anybody to get what they want. And we see the effects of that. And so how is that playing out in your life? How, you know, lust is a huge one, right? I mean, and there's enough young people in here where it's like, you know, we could be really motivated and do really stupid shit for lust. You know, it's like we lose all of our senses. We lose touch with reality. And I have a kind of a funny... in the Buddha's life, there was a deity called Mara, Have you guys heard of Mara? Mm-hmm. So Mara was really a personification. Mara was sort of the mythology of the Buddha's internal world was expressed through this figure, through this sort of demonic, devil-like figure, right? Mm-hmm. So Mara, at one point, and I bring this up because I was talking about the lust, Mara at one point was really, really frustrated because he couldn't get through to the Buddha. He couldn't break the Buddha down. And that was all he tried to do all the time, was to break the Buddha down. And so his daughters... So his daughters came along and they really wanted to help him out, right? Because they saw Pops was really disappointed, so they wanted to come and help him. And so this is it's a little bit long, but I think it's really interesting. And I love the way the suttas read. I don't know how many of you have read the suttas or are interested in the suttas, but it really takes me back to the time of the Buddha and what was going on for him. Now, when Mara the Evil One had spoken these stanzas of disappointment in the Blessed One's presence, he left that place and sat down cross-legged on the floor not far from the Blessed One, silent, dismayed, with shoulders drooping and head down, glum, and with nothing to say, scraping the ground with a stick. Right? So this is the devil, like, pissed off because he couldn't get through to the Buddha. He couldn't, like, tempt the Buddha in any way. Then Tanha, Arati, and Raga, those are his three daughters. Tanha means craving, Arati means boredom, and Raga means lechery. So the three of them, the three daughters of Mara, went to him and spoke to him in stanzas. Oh, father, why are you so disconsolate? Whom are you brooding over? We can catch him. Set a snare of lust. We'll tie him up, just as they catch a forest elephant, and bring him back into your power. An arahant sublime in this world, and when a man escapes from Mara's sphere, there are no wiles to lure him back again. But lust. And that is why I grieve so much. Then Tanha, Arati, and Raga, Mara's daughters, went to the Blessed One, and they said to him, O monk, we worship your feet. But the Blessed One took no notice, since he was liberated by the utter ending of the essentials of existence. They withdrew to one side and consulted together. Men's tastes vary. Suppose we each create the forms of 100 young girls. They did so, and they went to the Blessed One and said, O monk, we worship your feet. Again, for the same reason, the Blessed One took no notice. Then they withdrew to one side and consulted each other. Men's tastes varied. Suppose we create the forms of 100 virgin women. And then they go through and they go, women who have been born once, women that have been born twice, mature women, old women. You know, they didn't put in, like, redheads, or, you know, they could have, like, gone through the hall. Because men's tastes vary. In each case, they did so, and they went to the Blessed One and said, O monk, we worship at your feet. A lot of the suttas are very repetitive because it was an oral tradition for 500 years. So how it was passed down was through repetition. So when a lot of the suttas, if you read them, are like that. So anyway, they went back to him again. He didn't do anything. Then they withdrew to one side, and they said, it seems that our father was right. For if we had so tempted any monk or Brahmin who was not free from lust, his heart would have burst, or hot blood would have gushed from his mouth, right? So it's that, like, I gotta have it. Like, I'm gonna die if I don't have it. Or he would have shriveled, dried up, and withered like a cut green rush. They went to the Blessed One and stood at one side. Tanha spoke to him in stanzas. Do you now dream in woods, immersed in sorrow? Have you lost wealth, or are you pining for it? Is there some crime committed by you in the town? Why do you not make friends among people? Is there none that you can call friend? And the Buddha says, I have defeated all the serried hosts of pleasant, luring forms. I have found bliss, pondering alone, bliss of the goal attained, the bliss that lies in the quiet of the heart. So I do not seek friends among the people. Then Arati spoke, what abiding does a bhikkhu practice here, that having crossed over 5 of the floods, the 6th he may cross 2? What meditation practiced forbids sense pleasures access to him? And the Buddha says, tranquil in body, with liberated mind, contriving nothing, mindful and detached, knowing Dharma, absorbed without thought roving, unangry and unanxious, unperplexed, such abiding does a bhikkhu practice here, that having crossed over 5 of the floods, the 6th he may cross to, such meditation practice forbids sense pleasure access to him. And then finally, the girls go back to Mara and say, you are right, he's hopeless, we can't do anything. And he said, fools, you have tried to split a rock by poking it with lily stems, to dig a hill out with your nails, to chew up iron with your teeth, to find a footing on a cliff, with a great stone upon your head. And so I love that as sort of the ultimate, you know, so right, we have the ultimate and the relative, and we're all kind of living in the relative, right? But the ultimate was the Buddha was able to withstand and hold back these cravings, the lust, the passion, the desire. And then we'll get into the others too, ill will and sleepiness and all of these. And it's not that these things didn't come to him anymore. It's not that he didn't, again, because multiple times through his life, Mara comes back over and over and over again. He's very tenacious and doesn't give up. But each time as he goes, he's able to say, I see you, Mara, right? I see you. And so what the practice is offering to us is, how can we, when desires arise, how can we notice that that's all it is? Like, do we actually have to be driven? Do we actually have to take action? Or can we notice, oh, this is what lust feels like. Oh, this is what greed feels like. This is what wanting feels like. What does that feel like in my experience? And it can depersonalize it. We don't have to take it personally. Okay, so the other ones, and I'm not even going to get into them, the other ones are aversion or ill will, sleepiness, it's often called sloth and torpor, right? And I do want to talk about that a teeny, real sleepiness when you sit down, totally legitimate. Like, if you're tired, sleepiness is legitimate. What oftentimes happens is if you find yourself getting sleepy every time you sit down, you might be hitting something, you might be getting to something that you're checking out from, that you don't want to have to see and you don't want to have to acknowledge. So check that out. The next one is restlessness, which we experience. Restlessness comes with anxiety, it comes with guilt, it comes with a lot of that stuff that I was talking about. When our mind isn't clear from maybe things that we've done in the past or relationships that we're trying to work through, that often causes us restlessness in the body and the mind. And then the last one, the final one, is doubt. And doubt is oftentimes the one that can be the most sticky, because it can be the one that can make us leave our practice, right? Because we could be here and go, oh, after tonight for the newcomers, Buddhism isn't for me. You know, I think I'm going to go check out yoga instead. Maybe that's going to be the answer. And this teacher, Lee Brazington, he sort of calls all religions the mortality project. He thinks that all religions were created because people needed to know what happens to us after we die. You know, so there's all these ways that we want to know. We need to know. We want to know answers. And our doubt feeds that, because we don't know what's going to happen, and we want to know. And so this is another very common one, and something that, like I said, can send people running and not staying with our practice. So, you know, what I really just want to point out is that when these things arise, they are normal. When you're feeling these things, what we're working at and why this awareness practice piece that I showed you today is really helpful at identifying them. And so work on it for about a week. Work on it when you're out in your day. Work on it when you're on your cushion. And just kind of take a breath, take a second, and say, oh, is that greed? Is that aversion? Is that sleepiness? Is that restlessness or is that doubt? And see if you can identify them. See if you can notice. And why it's important is because then we can see, A, they're impermanent, they don't last. B, they don't define you. They aren't who you are. It's not, I am greedy, I am sleepy, right? It's sleepiness arises, sleepiness happens. Maybe you're not going to be sleepy later, right? So it's that this self-absorption that we get into whenever we get caught in a mental state. And this is kind of a pulling back and going, oh, this isn't me. This isn't who I am. This doesn't define me. It's a state that's arisen. And that's been talked about, like I said, for 2,600 years. It's not new. Right? So there's a lot of freedom in that. There's a lot of space in that to just let yourself off the hook and become aware. Right? You're off the hook. All of you are off the hook. But pay attention. So let's sit just for a second. One of my favorite Rumi poems. This being human is a guest house. Every morning a new arrival, a joy, a depression, a meanness. Some momentary awareness comes as an unexpected visitor. Welcome and entertain them all, even if they're a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. Still treat each guest honorably. He may be cleaning you out for some new delight. The dark thought, the shame, the malice, meet them at the door laughing and invite them in.
You have just listened to a podcast from Against the Stream Buddhist Meditation Society. If you'd like to make a contribution to help support these teachings, please visit againstthestream.org.